Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. 11 states and the District of Columbia now allow the recreational use of marijuana, and in some of those states, it's already a multi-billion dollar legal industry. But the new cannabis economy comes with some strange results. Legal pot sales are growing, but in states like Massachusetts and California, the black market is booming, even growing faster than the legal market. More people are still choosing the dealer over the dispensary. So this hour on Point, how legal marijuana is helping the black market. And you can join us. Are dispensaries popping up in your state? And if so, what do you see? Or if, like the old saying goes, you have a friend who buys weed, where are they getting it from? Why do you think the legal market may be helping the black market? And what should we do about it? Join us online at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. And joining me first today is Natalie Fertig. She's with us from Washington, D.C. She's the federal cannabis policy reporter for Politico. Natalie, welcome to On Point.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. Okay, so first of all, where are the places that the legal market for marijuana has actually been quite a boon for the black market?
So I focused on three different states for this story: Oregon, California, and Massachusetts. And one thing that you can see in all cannabis policy all around the country is that every state has a very different situation. But California and Massachusetts, definitely within the state, you can see that the black market has still, it's competing a lot with the legal market. And in most of those states, most of the purchases are still happening in the black market, right, in those two states.
I'm seeing that in California, by some estimates, the black market is $5 billion bigger than the legal market. It's actually outstripping the legal market.
Yeah. And, you know, the state government in Massachusetts told me that 80% of the sales in Massachusetts are also still happening out of the black market, or what's kind of a gray market in the state right now, not in the legal dispensaries.
Okay. So can you tell us what this looks like on the ground a little bit? Because you, for example, talked to a dispensary owner in Los Angeles who had something interesting happen just down the street from him.
Yeah. So in Los Angeles, the city kind of took a while in getting its regulations up and running. And so in that time, after the state legalized, but the city still didn't give out guidelines to what dispensaries were supposed to do to get licensed, within that time, a bunch of unlicensed dispensaries popped up and people started shopping at them. And as the licenses then were doled out, those dispensaries that were unlicensed were able to continue to sell for less money. The prices were cheaper there. So consumers not really understanding how to tell the difference between a licensed dispensary and an unlicensed dispensary just kept shopping at the cheaper ones, because people want to buy something cheaper if they can get it cheaper. That's just how people work.
Yeah. I mean, you point out that in Los Angeles, as you mentioned, the unlicensed dispensaries actually outnumber the legal ones.
By far.
By how much? Yeah.
Well, there's one district I talked to, a city council member, and he was telling me that there's 40 dispensaries in his one district, and only two of those are licensed.
Only two? Okay.
Yeah. Oh, wow. And that's one of the more dramatic examples of that, but there's estimates that there's over 1,000 dispensaries in Los Angeles, but only 200 are licensed.
Okay. And then one of the dispensary owners, the legal dispensary owners that you talked to, you know, he was losing quite a bit of his sales to this unlicensed dispensary down the street. And he called the state and tried to report them. And what happened?
Nothing. The last time I talked to him, he said that he had reported it. His lawyer had reported it. and the dispensary was still open.
Okay. So we'll talk more throughout the hour about sort of the causes behind this. It's a story of taxes and regulation and piecemeal laws around the nation here. But Natalie, hang on for just a second, because I actually want to talk to someone who is living this right now. And Alfonso Tucky Blunt joins us from Oakland, California. He's co-owner of the marijuana dispensary Blunt and More, and he was granted a license to sell recreational cannabis through Oakland's Equity Lottery Program. Alfonso also sold marijuana illegally from the age of 16. He was arrested for that in 2004 and received a 10-year felony probation. But as we said, now he is selling marijuana legally in a dispensary in Oakland. So, Mr. Blunt, welcome to On Point.
Welcome. Well, thank you for having me. My apologies. How are you?
That's quite all right. I'm doing well. First of all, tell us, how is business right now for you in Oakland?
Business is great. Business is booming.
It's booming. Good. And then,
yes.
But was it hard for you to get that license, to get started up?
So Oakland has a program, the equity program, where it gave people like me chances at ownership. Getting into it wasn't hard. We just had to fill out an application, meet some certain requirements, turn in the application. It's a lottery. It was literally a lottery. We put a bingo ball in a chamber. They roll the chamber around. If your ball was one of the last four balls in the chamber, you won the license.
I see. Okay, so you won that lottery, which helped you get the license. Were there costs? Like how expensive was it to get started up?
So to get started, basically to open a dispensary, it's roughly around, I would say, anywhere from $1 million to $3 million. We didn't have the funding, so we had to go and outsource funding and get a loan to start up the dispensary.
Wait, so Alfonso, if I can ask you, you just said that to get started, typically it would cost $1 to $3 million for a dispensary?
Yes, for a dispensary, yes.
Wow, okay. But you were able to get some funding?
That's including if you have to buy the property, you know, different things like that.
I got it.
Buy the rent from you. Yeah, that's basically the gist of it.
I got it.
But yeah, so, we ended up getting funding, and we were able to open in November.
Okay, so real estate's a big part of this, as it is in everything.
Yeah, oh yes.
Yeah, but let me ask you: is our black market sales, our illicit sales of pot in Oakland or in around your dispensaries, are they biting into your sales?
Two part answer to that: yes and no. Yes, because it's just in Oakland. That's just been the market forever. And for the record, I don't use black market anymore because I was on a podcast and a lady told me don't use it, so I say illicit.
Okay.
But the problem we're having is the taxes. The taxes are so high on cannabis that who wants to come in the store and pay 30, almost 40% of taxes if I can go down the street and buy it for cheap? So the way we kind of counteract that is trying to have the lowest prices in the area so the taxes aren't as high. But I know people on both sides of the fence, and it kind of has affected us, but not really because of who I am to the city I'm in. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like yes and no. I know about it, but it's not affecting me. It may be affecting other people.
So how? Give us a sort of an example of like how much you have to sell. I don't know, an eighth of pot for versus how much someone can get it on the illicit market.
Got you. Our mid grade eggs generally go around for about $50 before the tax out the door. $50 before tax. So you might be looking at about $62 out the door for, you know, pretty good grade eighth where you can maybe go down the street and buy for 25, maybe even 20.
I see. So there's a big difference there.
Yes, indeed.
Okay.
Yes, indeed.
Do you think? So you talked about taxes. Obviously, getting those licenses is tough for folks. Do you think there will, in California, what's going to take to sort of change things here to make the legal market more attractive than the illicit market?
People in government talking to people like me, coming out and actually seeing what's going on in the industry and realizing that it's better to lower more product so they can get more money out of the taxes, whereas they have the high taxes people run away from. It's just like when I was selling on the legal market. If you can sell it lower, you can make more money. So they're just going to have to come out and listen to the people that's in the industry and actually know what's going on instead of just making these laws just kind of like on the fly, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. So, Taki, can I ask you, I mean, do you prefer selling legally in your dispensary than what you had to do when you were selling it illegally?
1,000,000%. Yes, indeed, I prefer it because it's something that I've always wanted to do. I never wanted it to be illegal. It was just illegal. You know what I mean? So, no, I love being on the legal side. I want more people to come to the legal side. Why not? It's way more money in it, something we can use for generational wealth for our kids, kids, kids. So, yes, I love it way more. I'm not looking over my shoulder. You know what I mean? I'm not worried about this, that, and the other. So, no, I love it. Yeah. I wouldn't have it any other way.
So it's brought safety, security. You're own business owner now. Okay.
Yes.
All right. So tell me, but as we said at the top of the show, by some estimates across California, illicit sales of marijuana are $5 billion more than the legal sales. You said you wanted government officials to talk to people like you more. So if they did, what would you tell them?
Just like I said, lower the taxes. Because they're so concerned. The main concern with the government is that they want to make money off cannabis. We get that. But making the money off cannabis will be a whole lot easier if you lower the taxes and just getting them to understand that sentiment will go a long way, but they kind of just focus on the quick money instead of the long-term money. We need this to be a long-term industry. You can't make all the money in 1 month, you know what I mean, off of these high taxes. If you lower it, I guarantee they'll see a change, you know what I mean? But it's just getting them to understand that.
Got it. Well, Alfonso Taki Blunt, co-owner of the marijuana dispensary Blunt and More in Oakland, California, thanks so much for joining us today.
Man, thank you.
Natalie Furtig, we've just got about 30 seconds to go before we have to take a quick break here. I mean, what do you hear in Tucky's story there? I mean, he kept talking about California's high tax rate on marijuana.
Yeah, I was nodding my head while I was listening because it's something that I've heard from so many people across a lot of different issues in California. Farmers want lower taxes. Dispensary owners want lower taxes. A lot of them say, if this could be lower, we could get off the ground faster.
Interesting. But of course, from the perspective of the state and maybe even other residents, the high tax rate is one of the reasons they were able to legalize marijuana in the first place, right? Like there had to be something in it for the state. So we'll explore that more a little bit more when we come back. We are talking about how where marijuana is legal in those 11 states and in Washington, in the District of Columbia as well, how the legal market may actually be supporting a boom in the illicit market for pot. We'll be right back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about how the legalized marijuana market in several states has an interesting impact in those states where it may actually be helping the illicit market for pot. And we're exploring why. And let's hear a little bit more from California, because the state this year failed to pass legislation that would have reduced taxes on marijuana purchased at legal dispensaries. Assemblyman Tom Lackey, who represents Palmdale, is one of the lawmakers who was behind the bill. Here's what he said in January about why he believes reducing taxes on marijuana would help eliminate the so-called gray market sales.
The legal cannabis businesses are currently at a huge disadvantage when compared to the illicit market, sometimes referred to as the gray market. Right now, the illicit market is dominating the cannabis industry. These are bad actors. These are people who are evading taxes and making our communities less safe. We need to give the good guys a chance to succeed.
That's California Assemblyman Tom Lackey. But that bill to reduce, or at least temporarily reduce, taxes on cannabis in California failed to pass. Christy Knoblich-Palmer is co-founder of Kiva Confections, a marijuana company that's known for producing THC-infused chocolate. Last year, she told Reason TV, that's the affiliate of the libertarian publication Reason Magazine, she told them that as long as California has heavy taxes and regulates cannabis, legal outlets, she thinks, will never be able to compete with the black market.
The end consumer is walking into a regulated store and seeing prices up here, and then they're walking into an unregulated store or they're calling their guy and they're seeing prices down here. So the unregulated market really has the potential to derail the entire system because it's undercutting all the legal operators.
Well, we're joined today by Natalie Fertig. She's the federal cannabis policy reporter for Politico. She's written a story about this issue. It's titled How Legal Marijuana is Helping the Black Market. And we have a link to that at onpointradio.org. Natalie, let me just take a couple of calls here really quickly. Mendez is calling from Boston, Massachusetts. Mendez, you're on the air.
Hi, Megan. I love your show. I want to make a comment real quick. So they're looking at this in only one aspect. So, yes, if you lower the taxes down a little bit, it will help out a lot. But then again, not only is it taxes, it's also accessibility. I could just go down the street and buy a bag for cheaper and more easy, more convenient for me. Now I have to find stores that's about, 10 miles probably more away. So it's not only taxes, it's convenience.
Yeah. Mendez, thank you so much for your call. Natalie, comment on that, because, yeah, the financial aspect of it is quite important, but there's still a real there's piecemeal availability as these legal markets slowly get up and running. And in a lot of communities, even where in the states where marijuana has been legalized, locally they're pushing back against dispensaries opening up in their neighborhoods.
Yeah, no, accessibility is a huge issue. I mean, Boston, the city of Boston, has yet to have an open operating dispensary. 60% of California still has not legalized the sale of marijuana, though they've legalized the use of marijuana. So if you think about the huge state of California, how are people in a county that is nowhere near one of the legal counties getting marijuana? Well, they have to get it on the illicit market. And when we look at part of my story, looked at Oregon and how within Oregon, the illicit market is not really existent in the state because marijuana is very cheap. It's very accessible. There are a lot of dispensaries. There are actually more dispensaries than there are Starbucks now in the state. But they're exporting it to all of these states that still do not have legal marijuana, mm-hmm. because it's not accessible there. It's honestly, everyone that I've talked to has said in some way that the accessibility aspect is the thing that is really continuing this, because as long as there are people who want marijuana who live in a place that they cannot legally buy it, someone is going to produce it and ship it to them.
Well, so can we talk about the Oregon model a little bit more here, Natalie? Because as you write, unlike, say, California and Massachusetts, even Colorado and other places, You say that Oregon actually tried to reduce the amount of regulation as much as possible and make licensing as easy as possible. You said there's more dispensaries now than Starbucks, and as you reported, three times as many dispensaries as even McDonald's. So they've achieved that there. Like, how did they do it?
Well, they made the barrier to entry really low. There were definitely regulations, there were fees, there's taxes, but compared to California, they're so low. So getting into the market was not as hard as it is for someone in California or in Massachusetts even. And so that merely makes a difference in who can enter the market. A lot of the people that were selling or growing illegally before legalization easily were able to move into the legal market. That had its downsides. It created a huge oversupply of marijuana that's been covered kind of dramatically. Some people say there's the lowest I've heard is that there is three more times than the entire population of Oregon could use in a year. And they can't export it out of the state yet because there's no interstate commerce with marijuana. You can produce it within your state, but you can only sell it within your state if your state has legal marijuana.
Right. Federal regulations prohibiting
Yeah, because
that.
Of federal regulations. Mm-hmm. And so that has really lowered the price. It is easy to get marijuana in Oregon. Back to cost, if someone is looking for marijuana, they know there's a dispensary close to them, and they know that the prices are going to be the same, if not cheaper, as what someone, their guy, would have sold them. But that has obviously also worked the other way, where dispensaries have been closing, going out of business, farms have been going out of business because they can't get enough money for the marijuana. So there's pros and cons to that.
Well, so has the easy availability of legal marijuana in Oregon counteracted the issue of taxes on pot there? So like as we heard in California, people are just, they're like, the taxes are too high on the legal marijuana. Is that no longer an issue in Oregon?
Not for the consumer.
Okay.
There's definitely still a lot of issues for the producers and the sellers because they can't sell their marijuana enough or cheap, expensively enough to make up for the taxes and fees and regulations. And that's starting to right itself. The state of Oregon has started to reduce the amount of licenses actually that they've issued. But yeah, I mean, supply and demand, it's kind of traditional rules of supply and demand. There's a lot of supply right now in Oregon, and so prices are really low. So people don't feel like they have to go far from the dispensary. So no one's really buying on the illicit market within Oregon. What Oregon's role in the illicit market is that it is growing a lot of illicit marijuana that is being exported out of the state because there are still so many states in the country that do not have legal recreational or adult use cannabis.
Right. So how is Oregon dealing with that? Because it's legal to grow it. I mean, are they trying to find some way to stop the exporting of it to, you know, Idaho, et cetera? Or they can't get the growers to grow less.
Yeah. So it's a big problem. I've talked to some law enforcement in Oregon, and predominantly what they've said is that they are really under-resourced. There's not a lot of money. Where most of this is being grown is in southern Oregon, where there's really not a lot of people. A lot of these towns don't have a town police force. They have the county sheriff, of whom there's one. I talked to one sheriff who was just saying, I don't have the people for all of this. You know, there's one sheriff and two deputies. And the state is aware of this. There's been a lot of conversations on this in the state legislature in how to redistribute resources to either state patrol or sheriffs in southern Oregon, where a lot of these illicit farms still are. And I know that there's been some grants that have been doled out, but then there's also more conversations happening in the Oregon legislature about passing laws.
Right.
To specifically put tax dollars into fighting this.
Got it. Well, we're going to hear from an industry analyst here in just a second, but I do want to, there's a lot of callers here, so I just want to get at least another one in here while I can. Jerry is calling from Detroit, Michigan. Jerry, you're on the air.
Hello.
Go ahead.
How are you today?
I'm doing great. Go ahead, Jerry.
Michigan's a little different, but it's definitely, we have some things in common, and especially the accessibility part of it all. Everyone I know down here in Southeast Michigan, I mean, they'd rather go to a store than go to someone's house or have a grower come to their house. The fact is, there's just nowhere to go. There's so much demand in Southeast Michigan right now for cannabis. It's out of control.
Well, Jerry, thank you so much for your call and the insight there from Michigan. Let's introduce now to the conversation Tom Adams. He joins us from Santa Cruz, California. He's managing director and principal analyst for industry intelligence at BDS Analytics. It's a company that provides market research, data analysis, and consulting for the legal cannabis industry, as well as pharma and the beverage and tobacco industries. Tom Adams, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so I have to ask you a question here. We've got a comment that's come in from one of our listeners who calls himself Citizen James, who says that decades after Prohibition was repealed, illegal sources continued prospering. Citizen James doesn't think that old distribution channels disappear simply because of a change in legality, that it takes generations for a market to mature. Is that what we're seeing here with cannabis?
Well, one of the most interesting things I encountered as I got into the cannabis space 3 years ago was and I wish I'd saved the source because I haven't found it since, but that about a third of the alcohol business was still illicit in the early 60s. So that's 30 years after Prohibition ended. And I think for similar reasons, the local unavailability, many states, whole states, not to mention counties, were dry. And every state rushed in with the high tax rates and sort of tried to make money off of alcohol. So that created a price differential like we have in cannabis.
Well, so but the price differential is massive, right? I keep turning to California just because it's such an outsized example here, that if the illicit cannabis market in one state alone is more than double the size of the legal market, I mean, that's a huge delta there. What's going to take to close it?
Well, I think we've heard several of the reasons. Yeah. The things that are going to do it, lower taxes are essential. Regulators rolled in and were frankly encouraged by those who wanted to legalize cannabis that were happy to pay whatever tax rates you want to get legal cannabis. And I think what everybody forgot was that the illicit market's not going away and doesn't pay those taxes. So it's, you know, it ends up being a huge number in California. There's a 15% excise tax. There's a 10% retail sales tax to start with. Oregon has none. And on top of that, the really scary thing in California is the 9.25 per ounce grow tax, which with the $1,100 pounds today is already 15%, you know, additional cost at the wholesale level. But pounds, of course, pound prices in other states have plummeted into the mid-100 range, 400 or 500 range in some cases in Colorado and Oregon. At that point, of course, we're talking about a 30-40% tax at that level. And so it just wasn't thought through as carefully as it could have been. The idea of having a per ounce tax rather than a percentage of revenue tax is just crazy, because prices are going to come down. So that's actually probably the main thing that needs to be fixed in California, is that grow tax. And many cities and counties tacked on their own per ounce grow tax using that model. And that's just kind of a ticking time bomb, whatever else happens.
Well, isn't it your own company, though, that forecasts that there will be a year-upon-year drop, even if it's slight, in illicit sales? I mean, I think this is from your company that you're saying that by 2024, California's illegal market will make up 47% of spending versus the majority that it makes up now.
Indeed. And that is thanks to folks like Mr. Blunt and Kristi Knobloch-Palmer. Businessmen and women are rolling into this industry and taking it legal, and despite all the hurdles, are doing some amazing things. They're opening up nice stores, lots of them when allowed, with great merchandising and an incredible selection of products, thanks to Ms. Palmer's company and others like it that are have developed an amazing array of edibles and concentrates and topicals and tinctures and gum and candy and a variety of and huge selections of strains of cannabis available that no street dealer could hope to match any of that.
Right. So this is a place where the legal market is offering something that the black market cannot. Right. So there's exactly. Are you saying there's growth potential there?
That's exactly why we're predicting that the California market resumes growing after it dropped, became the first market to actually move from medical access to adult use access last year and actually shrink the legal market in doing so. Most other states have doubled the legal market when they went adult use.
Okay. So, Tom, let me just ask you one more thing, because I keep coming back to taxes here because it's a real central part of this issue. Obviously, it's a really hard sell to get state legislators to reduce the tax rate on cannabis. They couldn't do it in California because you're asking legislators to sort of ratchet down a huge potential source of revenue.
It's not known to have happened a lot of times, especially in California. That's absolutely the case. So, but when you look at alcohol and tobacco, after years of ratcheting up taxes on both, the tax load there, which we think is about tax and regulatory load combined, including costs of various regulations, we've calculated at about 77% in California cannabis. But it's above 50% in a lot of states on tobacco and elsewhere. So, you know, the industries they learn how to – smart business people learn how to work with their government cross to bear.
Natalie Furtig, let me turn back to you here. I would say, actually, same question to you. In your reporting, did you see any willingness in these states to sort of make significant regulatory adjustments in order to boost the legal market?
I mean, I feel like that's just as complicated of a question as, as any, because this, you know, politics is complicated. There's huge forces on both sides in all of these states. You know, there's people that want to move and there's people that don't want to move on that. I know that for a lot of states, because cannabis is so new, I mean, even when you go back to Colorado and Washington State, having taxes was a huge boon to getting it passed. You know, we're saying these this tax dollars is going to go into law enforcement, into education. And so the idea of rolling back those tax dollars that was a huge part of convincing the populace to do this is something that is really hard. I know, especially in California, there's only a couple voices really calling incredibly strongly for this. And most of those voices are the lawmakers that are very strongly involved in being proponents of the cannabis industry already.
Yeah, well, we'll have to take a quick break and we'll get a lot more callers when we come back. We're talking about how the legal marijuana market in several states is actually helping the black market in those states or illicit marijuana sales. Listener Rick Stevens on Facebook tells us, what do you expect? The drive to legalize was driven by financial reasons and not moral ones. Heaven forbid American subjects enjoy themselves too much and the government not get their cut. We'll be back with a lot more. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about how the legal marijuana market in 11 states and the District of Columbia may be having a profound positive effect on the illicit marijuana market in those same states. We're joined today by Natalie Furtig. She's with us from Washington. She's the federal cannabis policy reporter for Politico. She wrote a story recently titled How Legal Marijuana is Helping the Black Market, and we have a link to that at onpointradio.org. Tom Adams also joins us. He's with us from Santa Cruz, California, from the studios of KZSC Santa Cruz, and he's managing director and principal analyst for industry intelligence at BDS Analytics, which provides market research for the cannabis industry. And let's go to a bunch of calls here. Mike is calling from Charlottesville, Virginia. Mike, you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for the discussion. This has been fascinating. Of course, Virginia is a non-legal state, and I'm living right, you know, sort of in the center of the state. So we're an hour and 10 minutes, hour and 20 minutes from Washington, D.C. One of the first changes that I saw in our area, in regards to the legal markets elsewhere, as soon as Colorado legalized, within a few days, you were, you know, basically trunk loads of cars with edibles and vials of liquid for vaping made it east as fast as a person could drive in a car. So, you know, it's funny, we live in the non-legal state, yet there are, you know, numerous ads on local radio stations where John Boehner is selling market investment opportunities to anybody with the money to get into the what they call the green cannabis or the gold cannabis rush.
That's right.
So it's online. There's a lot of online advertising. It's just ironic. There's in Virginia, I think, is a perfect example of the extremes. We have people that are obviously looking at the hemp market for helping farmers, and they're also looking to how do we reverse 100 years of putting people in jail and leapfrog over those same people that a lot of times are still in jail. And they're leapfrogging over the consumer, over the farmer, over the devotee. And I say with, 40 years of my own cannabis use, availability has never been an issue.
Right.
For me, I was incarcerated in 2004 for growing, given a year. One of the things that does to people is still to this day, even with a perfect CDL, I have a hard time finding employment because
Mike, forgive me for interrupting you, but I want to take the call back from you because we have another caller who's going to make a similar point here. So let's go to Jason. And Mike, thank you for that call. But Jason's calling us from Dayton, Maine. Jason, you're on the air.
Hey, nice to talk to you. So I just wanted to mention that, there's huge disparities in terms of both who has been targeted by the war on drugs. Our last governor here in Maine certainly put a target on the backs of you know, people of color saying that, you know, that was all who was selling drugs here when, you know, we know both white and black people use marijuana at similar rates, but black people are much more likely to you know, be arrested and go to jail for it. And here in Maine, there's limited numbers of licenses that are given out. So when dispensaries first opened up, it was only one per county. And I don't know of any licensed dispensary that's black or brown owned. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I feel uncomfortable. I buy both, you know, honestly, from the legal market and from the illegal market. And if I were to buy 100% from the legal market, I would basically be, you know, 100% of that money would be going to white-owned businesses. And so that makes me feel a little bit uncomfortable when the war on drugs has been, you know, on the backs of black and brown people in America.
Jason, thank you for that, mirroring the point that Mike was making there a second ago. Jason from Maine, thank you for your call. Natalie Furtig, so two big issues there. Let me just turn to you on the first one that Mike brought up, essentially saying that there's an umbrella issue here, and that is the fact that we have states legalizing marijuana, but we still have federal policy that sees it as an illicit, illegal drug here. And so, you know, he saw the rise in edibles, et cetera, in Virginia as soon as Colorado went legal. I mean, that's got to be a big problem that's going to shape both the legal and the illicit market for until changes happen at the federal level.
Oh, yeah, completely. I mean, one of my favorite kind of anecdotes about Oregon is that the highest grossing per capita dispensary is in a town of 400 people on the Oregon border, far, far from Portland or any of the major cities in Oregon, because it's an hour from Boise, Idaho. People drive up from Boise every weekend, hundreds of people, to buy from this dispensary in Oregon where it's legal. Idaho is one of three states that has zero cannabis use, even CBD for medical, left in the country. And I've talked to the Idaho State Patrol actually about this. And, you know, what they said to me was essentially it's not a big enough problem for us. You know, if local law enforcement wants to deal with that in Boise, that's fine. But there's so much more. And there's these anecdotes all over of people going from an illegal state into a legal state that's nearby. Some of the people I've talked to in Boston also, they're saying, you know, the legal dispensaries in Boston, mostly out-of-staters shopping at these. But the biggest issue right now with interstate illicit market is these large shipments of flower from Oregon and also still from Northern California, which are the historical grow areas in the United States. They've been doing this for 60 years. You know, going from those areas to New York, New Jersey, Illinois, Texas, Florida, North Carolina. Those are the big, you know, the reason that Idaho keeps confiscating so much marijuana is because it's going through Idaho. It's not stopping in Idaho. It's en route to North Carolina. It's en route to New York. And so some of the people I talk to in places like Oregon are saying, if you legalize it everywhere and you legalize us, our interstate commerce, we'll just legally ship this everywhere, because
right,
we're already shipping it illegally either way.
Right. So Tom Adams, we have a listener, Derek Ryder on Facebook, who says keeping it illegal on the federal level keeps the black market going. And I'm sure the cannabis industry would love federal law to change on pot, but I don't see that anywhere on the horizon.
Oh, I would disagree. There is already a bill with several hundred sponsors in Congress called the States Act that would essentially leave this up to the states. It would exempt cannabis commercial activity from criminal prosecution by the federal government if a state has legalized it. And Orrin Hatch, the most conservative guy in the Senate, suggested that there's a kumbaya moment available to Democrats and Republicans in Congress around cannabis. So that was shocking to me a year and a half ago. But I see that exactly happening. What's happening is that blue states like California and now New York has been talking about a 45% grow tax if they are going to legalize adult, are taking that approach to cannabis legalization, whereas a deep red state like Oklahoma with a 4% retail sales tax, no excise taxes, and very liberal licensing of dispensaries because they're free market believers, has hundreds of stores. And is actually bigger than Ohio's medical market. They both launched the same month. So there's definitely this the states' rights argument for legalizing at the federal level that both Democrats and Republicans can get behind, that we think does lead to federal legalization in this form, essentially just exempting it from the CSA if your state has approved it.
Hmm. Interesting. So to the other issue that both Mike and especially Jason, our callers, brought up, what, Tom, what is your response, or do you share the concerns that Jason had, that a lot of some of these states are moving towards legalization or have moved towards legalization as a way to, I don't want to say make amends, but for the war on drugs that did largely fall on the backs of people of color? I mean, so many people of color serving very long sentences in prison simply for possession of marijuana. But now, as legalization unfolds, these are the very communities who are having the hardest time getting a toehold in the legal markets. I mean, is that a problem? That's a problem, right?
Absolutely, yeah. No, and I don't have any objection to making amends. This is something America owes to its minority communities, and making good on that is fine. And it is a major motivation for legalizing. And I think what has to happen is we have to get smarter about how we create these equity programs. Generally speaking, it's been a challenge for those Tucky talked about early on, to raise the money to get into the business if you're a former felon trying to get into the legal cannabis business. And unfortunately, so many minorities are. There needs to be good thought put into how it can be more part of our equal employment opportunity programs that the country has everywhere. You don't have to own a business to benefit hugely from legal cannabis. You can have a great job with benefits and a retirement plan from one of the many companies that are sprouting up to enter the legal cannabis business. And so the equity plans have been well meant, but have actually slowed down, for example, the opening of legal stores in Los Angeles, because meeting the equity requirements has been a real challenge there. So a lot of smart thinking needs to go into the regulation of this new industry. The door is open now, of course, because legal cannabis is coming. And with the public support levels we have, 90% approve medical, 67% of Americans approve the legalization of cannabis in the latest Gallup poll. So politicians just need to do the hard work of figuring out how to best handle this. And that's a combination of treating it in a free market approach to the licensing of businesses and keeping the taxes low so that the business can overtake the illicit market and produce the tax revenue that states are expecting.
So, Tom, just for a second here, I want to circle back to sort of the shape of the black market or the illicit market itself in the United States. I mean, are South and Central American cartels still supplying the black market in the United States for marijuana?
In a different way than they ever have before. You know, California did a report when they launched its program that there's 13.5 million pounds of cannabis grown in California. 600,000 of those pounds consumed legally in the medical program in 2016. 1.9 million consumed otherwise, but 11 million pounds, 80-90% of it goes east and even into Mexico, believe it or not, and elsewhere. It's exported worldwide. So that's the new shape of the cannabis market. And the way the cartels play now is they're not trying to smuggle it across the border anymore. They are setting up shop in national forests and public lands around California and Oregon and elsewhere in Western states. And these are thugs who are, living near our communities, growing cannabis illegally because there's a market for it. And part of the reason is the regulatory regimes that have been put in place.
Okay, let's go back to our callers. Adam is calling from Richmond, Virginia. Adam, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was a dispensary agent in Arizona, and I can't tell you how many times I would see certain patients come in and, and they would buy, our prices were really low for the area that we were in Phoenix. It was $10 a gram. They would come in and buy them for $10 a gram and then turn around and sell them for $25 a gram on the street. That's a big chunk of the business out there. I'd see patients come in 2, 3, 4, 5 times a day. As long as they didn't hit their limit, we were able to sell to them at any time, just full willingly knowing that they would be selling it on the streets just by being, intuition, that kind of thing. So,
wow. Adam, thank you for your call. So medical marijuana purchasers turning right around and selling it on the street, another form of the black market there. Let's go to Jerry, who's calling from Detroit. Jerry, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to talk about the illicit pot versus the licensed sellers. And I don't really like how, to use the term illicit pot or act like it's somehow like an illegal thing. Because I kind of think they're both like honest and legitimate business owners. And, just because the state is and the people that work for the state are choosing to like harass or threaten somebody and like their whole industry, and then some of them capitulate and, pay the taxes and do what they want them to do, it doesn't make the people that are actually selling it and not licensed or not paying the tax, doesn't make them any more or any less legitimate or any less honest. They're just, they're businessmen. They're not doing anything wrong. If they are doing something wrong, then I think if someone thinks they're doing something wrong, I think that person has the problem, so.
Well, Jerry, we just got 2 minutes left here, so I'll take the call back from you. And to be fair, technically speaking, in many states, they still are doing something illegal in the eyes of the federal government as well. But I take your point. Thank you for your call, Jerry. Natalie, let me turn back to you here. I'm thinking about, are there parallels between the slow maturation of, say, the medical marijuana market that we've been seeing? I mean, California's had that for 20 years now, roughly, and the legal, fully legal marijuana market as well. Is I guess I'm just circling back to this question of, is this, it just takes time when we decriminalize and legalize things for markets to mature and really become settled?
Yeah, I mean, I think that could be said about any market. The medical marijuana market is definitely a different animal from the recreational or the adult use, just because, I mean, there was still a large population in every state that could not use it. So it's harder to draw corollaries between that. I know a lot of people draw corollaries between the adult use marijuana market and the end of prohibition, alcohol prohibition, so many decades ago. And there's interesting things to be seen there just in it's a new industry. And so people get into it and some businesses fail and some don't. And no one really knows. There's no model for this. Medical marijuana was on such a smaller scale just in terms of who could qualify for the marijuana that states are really just kind of making this up as they go along. And the illicit market is a good example of unexpected byproducts of this.
Well, Natalie Fertig, federal cannabis policy reporter for Politico, joining us from Washington. Natalie, thank you so much for being with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And Tom Adams, managing director and principal analyst for industry intelligence at BDS Analytics. They provide data analysis and consulting for the cannabis industry. With us from the studios of KZSC in Santa Cruz, California. Tom, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.